Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Screen Time is up later in the show. Now in depth on what we're learning about the way Donald Trump will run American national security.
Wake up, America. There is no substitute for American leadership and exceptionalism. America should not fear our enemies. In fact, we should clearly define our enemies, face them head on, and then defeat those that seek to threaten our country and our way of life.
Donald Trump's choice of Michael Flynn for national security advisor gives us some insight on that. So does his appointment of Congressman Mike Pompeo for director of the CIA. So can we get a sense of how President Trump will handle an expansionist China, an ambitious Russia, a desperate ISIS, an al-Qaeda that is resurgent in places like Yemen, and what's happening in Syria? And I haven't even mentioned the threat of cyber hacking yet. Two guests, your questions as well. Is there a foreign policy challenge that you believe the new president and his team must prioritize? Think about that as we begin the conversation. 651-227-6000, 800-242. 2828 on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Bill Danvers is with us. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he joins us today from Washington. And Bill, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Carrie, it's great to be on your show again. Thanks so much for having me.
Prem Kumar is with us. He's senior vice president at the Albright Stonebridge Group and a former senior director on the White House National Security Council. And he's with us from Washington. And Prem, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Carrie. Great to be with you.
You know, Bill, I've heard some rather contradictory views of Michael Flynn. He's an outstanding intelligence analyst. He's easily co-opted into conspiracy theories. He's thoughtful, but he retweets Islamophobic nonsense. Tell me what your view is.
Well, first of all, can I say hello to my friend Prem, and it's great to be on the show with him. General Flynn obviously served his country with distinction in Iraq and Afghanistan and was, by most accounts, a very good intel officer, although he was relieved of his duties as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And as a general officer and as the head of an important component of the intel community, he's got good management experience. And whether or not he was a good manager may be some question. Press accounts suggest that he may have management issues may have been one of the reasons he was relieved. But at least he has a sense of how the government works. And that's really important for an incoming national security advisor.
Will you say why that is so important?
Sure, because you're basically running the national security process, bringing all the agencies together to bring decisions to the principals and to the president. It's a very key role. I mean, there are two models. One is you can have an operational national security council, national security advisor. Henry Kissinger's a good example of that. And you can have one that focuses primarily on process and bringing the agencies together. And I think Brent Scowcroft is probably a good example of that.
General Michael Hayden was on The Takeaway a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about Michael Flynn. And as you know, he's got experience as an NSA and CIA director. And he has he verifies a lot of what Bill just said, but he also has some concerns. Listen to what he said.
Now he's got to stretch his game. This is a global strategic level job. Secondly, Mike has a lot of ideas, but unless you're hiring a Kissinger or Brzezinski or a Scowcroft to be national security advisor, what you really want in the job is a process guy, a guy who makes sure all the parts of the government have a chance to express their views before the president makes a decision. And that's going to challenge Mike as well. And then finally, Todd, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the candidate Trump has been a bit intemperate, at least, in his language during the campaign. And so I would like a national security advisor who would balance that. I'm not sure instinctively that Mike is that guy because he's had his own comments during the campaign.
So, Prem, first to this idea of what Bill raised, which is the process and understanding how things work versus the big ideas that Michael Flynn has clearly come to the job with. What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, Bill made a good point in that General Flynn has had a distinguished track record as an intelligence officer, but as national security advisor, you do need to make sure that the government as a whole runs well and that all the various agencies have their say and that the president gets the full benefit of the government's views on a particular issue before he makes a decision. And that's where I think there are some questions, as General Hayden said, General Flynn doesn't have a track record of working across the government. I mean, there were questions about his management of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and also, frankly, with the other part of the job, which is presenting an accurate picture of the challenges that we face in terms of national security, because when he was the head of DIA, there were also concerns about some of the statements that he made and assessments. Some of his subordinates have talked about Flynn facts, which weren't necessarily grounded in what the intelligence community thought was actually happening. And that's a concern, I think, frankly, in this job, because the National Security Advisor does have the last word in briefing the president, usually. And that briefing needs to be as accurate as possible.
You know, Bill, this reminds me that there have been complaints and concerns raised about how the fact of President-elect Trump's conversations with foreign leaders have not been prefaced by intelligence briefings. And now I hear what Prem is saying about this, and that sounds like that could potentially continue into the actual administration, not having all of the knowledge before you go into these discussions.
Well, one would hope that wouldn't be the case. I think what I've seen in the media is that he's had three, President-elect Trump has had three briefings, intel briefings. But when he becomes president, he will get the presidential daily briefing, the PDB, every single morning. Some presidents like to read it and don't really necessarily pay a lot of attention, don't necessarily require a briefer coming in and having a conversation with him every morning. And some presidents prefer to have that conversation every morning. But one way or the other, the president will get that PDB every day and will have access to that intelligence every single day. Hopefully, General Flynn, because he is an intel officer, will emphasize to the president just how important it is to have that intel. And I think Prem is absolutely right. You got to have the facts, and they've got to be accurate facts. And you can't have just supposition. And rhetoric doesn't work when you're actually making decisions. And the other thing that I would add to add to what Prem has said is you need to be lighter on the rhetoric, and a lot more thoughtful in what you say, because everything you say when you're a president of the United States or a national security advisor, for that matter, matters. Every single thing you say, people pay attention to.
Even if it's via Twitter, Bill?
Particularly.
Especially.
Especially right. Via Twitter. It's still out there. You're actually not saying it, I guess, but you are pronouncing it.
Call here from Jay in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Jay. What are you thinking about here?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Yeah, so again, I think this is kind of the same myopic worldview, and quite frankly, in this appointment that has literally set the entire Middle East on fire and contributes to the displacement of millions of people, as well as the, thousands who are dead.
I was just going to ask you what the world view is that you're concerned about.
The world view is, this concept that America first, America, I'm trying to say. It's the idea that we can't, that we have, I get it. People are very much trying to protect themselves from what they perceive as real threats in the world. And I guess my big question is for your contributors is in the recognition that the efforts that we have made so far, dating back to different administrations, just don't seem to be producing the outcomes.
Okay.
And what I hear again in this nomination is a return to a philosophy, in my view, that has not worked worldwide.
Okay. Let me go to our guests here. Prem, would you address that first?
Well, I think we do have to give the new administration a chance. I think there are some concerns about, there are many concerns about President-elect Trump's worldview, and frankly also the lack of any specificity about what exactly he would do about the most thorny problems we face, from North Korea to Iran, Syria, and elsewhere. And there are also some concerns about process. I mean, as we've discussed, some of the appointments he's made do raise some questions. But governing is different than campaigning, and I think I would hope at least that when in office, President Trump and his national security advisor and other members of the national security decision-making structure would would take the benefit of the information and intelligence that the government has to offer and make decisions in a deliberate way.
Bill, Mike Flynn wrote this in his book, The Field of Fight, that came out earlier this year. And I actually think this speaks to something that our caller was raising, Jay. Flynn said, this administration, meaning the Obama administration, has forbidden us to describe our enemies properly and clearly. They are radical Islamists. They are not alone. They're allied with countries and groups who, though not religious fanatics, share their hatred of the West. Those allies include North Korea, Russia, China, Cuba, and Venezuela. Would you speak to this concern that Jay raised that we demonize certain leaders and countries in the world, and that feeds into this alliance that Michael Flynn is saying is between Russia, China, Cuba, Venezuela, North Korea, and Islamists?
Well, that's a very interesting sort of basket of enemies that he's lumping together, and I don't know that I would approach it in quite the same way. I mean, clearly we have differences with the Russians, but I don't know that I would call them an enemy in the same way I would call Daesh or ISIS or Al Qaeda an enemy. Because we also work with the Russians on things like the Iran deal, and we're still continuing to try to make an effort to work with them in Syria, and actually on North Korea as well. And I think North Korea is unique as well in terms of the kinds of issues that we've got to deal with them. And I don't really put them in the same category, which leads me to actually agree a little bit with what Jay said, not on this current administration, because I think they've done a pretty good job in terms of national security issues, but in terms of making sure that efforts and outcomes are in sync. I think we need to begin to look at these issues as they are and not just sort of rely on rhetoric and rely on instinct. We need to look at facts.
Yeah, what does that mean? I mean, take North Korea then for an example. What does that mean?
Well, I think in terms of North Korea, this new administration is going to have a strategy on how they want to deal with Kim Jong-un and his effort to have a ballistic missile that could potentially reach California in his effort to be able to put a nuclear device on that ballistic missile. How is the president and how is the national security advisor and others on the national security team going to deal with that issue? How are they going to deal with it in the context of how they the overall relationship with China? But I think that's a very separate issue from how we deal with ISIS and how we deal with Al Qaeda and how we deal with the counterterrorism and have a coherent counterterrorism strategy. And I also think that's very different from what they intend to do with Venezuela. In terms of Cuba, well, I think the president, President Obama, has done a pretty good job in trying to figure out a new way to approach Cuba and the Cuban people.
Let's come back to ISIS here in a minute, but let me remind listeners, if you've just tuned in, it's a conversation about some of the statements that Donald Trump made during the campaign about national security and foreign policy negotiation and interaction. And then with the appointment of Michael Flynn, maybe we're getting more of a sense of how this foreign policy will run under this new administration. Michael Flynn named as National Security Advisor. We've also got the name of the person that will direct the CIA, and he's a Kansas congressman. Our guests this morning, Bill Danvers and Prem Kumar, contemplating what we know, what some of the biggest foreign policy challenges may be. I think one of the questions is, does Donald Trump know what he doesn't know about foreign policy? So we'll talk about that as well. And I'm interested in your views on, is there a foreign policy challenge that you believe the new president and his team have to prioritize? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at @KerryNPR. And a call here from Peter in Burnsville who said, the people that Trump has chosen to focus on a threat that when they get into office probably won't exist, he says that's ISIS. The real threats come from Russia and North Korea. He's chosen a team for a crisis that doesn't exist. Prem, I have to come back to you on ISIS. Our caller is suggesting that threat is going to be greatly diminished by the time President Trump takes office. Is that true?
Well, you know, I think the Obama administration does deserve a significant amount of credit for the work it's done to take the fight to ISIS. I mean, ISIS has lost a significant amount of territory. There are far fewer foreign fighters coming in. They don't have the financial resources that they once did. Their leadership has been decimated. So I think there has been a lot of progress. The job is not done. And that will continue into the Trump administration, I'm sure. We're already seeing that the battle for Mosul is taking at least several weeks. Raqqa in Syria is next, and then there are other areas that ISIS controls. And it's also possible that ISIS will metastasize in the way that Al-Qaeda did after we began to really take the fight to them. So I do think that that fight will still be a priority. How the next administration approaches it will be very important, and whether we prosecute the military dimension of this fight well is separate from whether we do things that might continue to radicalize Muslims around the world and possibly even in the U.S. And some of what candidate Trump said during the election, I think, gives us great reason for concern on those fronts. And then also whether we're going to be able to mobilize our allies to do what they'll need to do to confront this threat when many of them are going to be questioning their relationship with the U.S.
So two things I want to follow up with you on what you just said. You said the concern may be that ISIS metastasizes the way Al-Qaeda did, which was basically we kind of stamp them out in one place and then they're resurgent in other places. And we can see that with Al-Qaeda in a place like Yemen. Where might be, some of the failed states or the territories that ISIS could retreat to and then be resurgent in?
Well, we've already seen that ISIS has set up a local affiliate, as it were, in Sinai, the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt. Uh-huh. They've also set up shop in Libya. And I think, the U.S. and its coalition partners have done quite a bit to push back in Libya. And the Egyptians are also obviously taking the fight to ISIS in Sinai. There are other areas where they could spread as well. I mean, I think we need to be imaginative here because back in the early part of the 2000s, it probably wasn't clear that Al-Qaeda would spread into Yemen, into the area near Morocco and Algeria, and even beyond. So it's certainly possible that ISIS, which sees itself as a global brand, not just limited to Iraq and Syria, could spread beyond those borders.
And Bill, to what Prem just said about some of the statements that Donald Trump made during the campaign, potentially radicalizing more people around the world, do you have the same concerns? And what would you point to as, as something that he said that's pretty concerning?
Well, I think General Flynn has made some pretty radical statements about Muslims and Islam as well. I think that's a big concern. First of all, I agree with Prem's analysis. The only other place I would add is Europe. We're beginning to see cells develop there as well. So the metastasizing ISIS, I think, is a big concern. A shift away maybe from the focus on a caliphate to having cells globally, which I think is occurring in Southeast Asia as well. But I think when you antagonize and alienate a whole group of people, I think 1.5 billion Muslims, you're obviously going to have a much tougher time in engaging them in a way to help defeat ISIS and defeat Al-Qaeda and defeat terrorists. And basically, we need those allies. We need allies within the Muslim community, both internationally and domestically. And we need to begin to figure out ways to work more closely with Muslim nations, obviously, which we've done some of, but the new administration will have to continue with that, but also with Muslim communities globally. Alienating them and making rash statements about Islam is not the way to go about that.
I want to ask you both about torture, because it does sound like Donald Trump's, statements or beliefs. It's actually hard to know exactly what he believes on torture. This is something that he said during the campaign about the use of torture. He has since softened this a bit, but let's listen to the campaign rhetoric.
We are living in a world where in the Middle East, they're cutting people's heads off. They're chopping a Christian's head off, and many of them. So then I went into this. I said, yes, I would bring back waterboarding, and I'd make it a hell of a lot worse.
So since he's been talking with some foreign policy experts, he is now saying that he may rethink that. Bill, this idea of torture, wouldn't there be a lot of legal things to get around if he were to reinstitute torture?
There are a couple of things. One is, yes, you're absolutely right. There would be legal issues. The second thing is, if he expects the the CIA, where I used to work, to get involved with enhanced interrogation techniques, waterboarding, or anything, any of the other enhanced interrogation techniques that that a previous administration used. He's absolutely wrong.
Why?
Because they will not do that. Because they've been chastised for having done it, and they will not step up to that again. I can almost guarantee you that will not happen. And I think that's a good thing. If I were on the Hill or advising senators or members on the Hill, I would suggest what they do is they codify the executive order that the president put out in the first couple of days of his administration back in 2009 that says we don't do this anymore. We don't have enhanced interrogation. We don't use enhanced interrogation techniques, which includes waterboarding. And I would make that the law of the land.
Prem, one of the things that we know about Congressman Mike Pompeo, who's going to run the CIA, is that he opposed President Obama's mandate to close those black sites that the CIA was running during the Bush administration. I don't know what he thinks about torture. Do you?
No, I don't. And that's going to be one of the questions that I imagine will come up during the confirmation hearing. So there are, you know, big questions about, you know, President-elect Trump's views on issues like torture and also some of his appointees. As Bill said, I think it's going to be difficult for the new administration to reinstate some of those practices because of the attention that was paid to them during the Bush administration and since. And I think there will also be resistance from within the federal bureaucracy to carrying out those practices if they want to do them again. I would also add that, you know, after candidate Trump talked extensively about waterboarding and other forms of torture during the campaign and said that he believed we should bring them back, he then apparently spent a few minutes talking to General Mattis about the same subjects,
right,
and was convinced apparently in a short conversation that those techniques don't work. So that does, in my mind, raise questions about the degree of conviction in the first place, and how committed he really is to pursue these kinds of policies.
You know, Bill, I think this kind of goes to something that one of our callers suggested. Bob in St. Paul called to say one of the first things the advisors have to do is to get Trump to take in some legitimate news. He says if he's not getting info just from his intelligence officers, it needs to be from reliable sources. I think Prem raises a good point. How do we know where this information comes from that forms these views that Donald Trump espouses? And then, as I think Prem suggests, then seems to change his mind on pretty quickly.
I think it's going to be pretty tough to stop Donald Trump from getting news wherever he gets the news. But what I think we can hope and depend on is that his advisors give him accurate and factual news. And I think in terms of international national security issues, that's a key role of someone like General Flynn. And it's also a key role of the intelligence community when they come in and they brief him to make sure that he gets the facts and as to what North Korea is doing, as to what's going on in Venezuela, what the Russians are up to, what ISIS is up to. I think he needs to at least have the facts presented to him. What he does with those facts and where he gets his other news, sources of information, I won't say news because it's not really news,
right,
is entirely up to him. And we don't really have a lot of control over that.
Bill Danvers with us this morning from the Center for American Progress, and Prem Kumar with us from the Albright Stonebridge Group. And they're helping us examine what foreign policy might look like in the Trump administration, taking a look at some of the people that he's named to key posts, taking a look at some of the things he said during the campaign and since, and asking you this morning if there's a foreign policy challenge that you believe the new president and his team must prioritize. Is there a foreign policy challenge you're most concerned about, given some of the things that Donald Trump said during the campaign? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where Mark says the Trump name will be on targets, quote unquote, all over the world. Can anyone prevent an overreaction to any attack on a Trump property? Bill, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that's a very good point. I mean, I think that it becomes a target, and I think that we've obviously got a national security apparatus, including the intelligence community, that does its best to prevent those kinds of attacks. But you're never going to hit 100%, and I think that's something that the president-elect and his team need to be aware of. The other thing, Kerry, if I may, I'd like to add is that when a new president oftentimes has a grace period, and you certainly have a bit of a grace period on domestic issues. You can do things like about the where, the when, and the how you're gonna follow through on domestic issues like infrastructure investment. But the world doesn't give the president-elect a grace period. The world doesn't allow the president-elect to sort of say, well, we'll give you a little time because you're new. The world goes on with or without the administration having its team in place. And that gets back to a point that you just made, Kerry. That's why he needs to get the facts. That's why he needs to get these briefings. That's why his staff needs to be measured in the way they approach these issues. You need experience, but you also need a little bit of humility. And when I say humility, I mean humility in the sense that the new team has to be willing to take advice from others, people like Prem who actually were there and were there recently. And in order to avoid making some of the same mistakes or missteps, you've got to have that measure of humility, you've got to have that measure of experience, and you've got to have a calm presence in charge of the national security apparatus.
And Prem, that's kind of what I meant when I said, does he know what he doesn't know? I mean, he's kind of a blustering personality, and we saw that succeeded with a number of American voters. I assume that when you're making foreign policy decisions, bluster is perhaps a dangerous trait to bring into those conversations.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I think you have to, as president, measure your words very carefully and be prepared to follow through on the statements and the commitments that you make. And also, frankly, consider what you might not say. I mean, there are some allies that are, I think, uncertain about where they might stand in a Trump foreign policy. And if mm-hmm. he doesn't make a point of reassuring them, that will raise questions as well. I mean, to go back to a point that you made earlier about the conversations he's had with other heads of state, you know, typically the State Department would help a president-elect to figure out how he should speak to foreign leaders and what order and what points to make, et cetera. That didn't seem like it happened during this transition. And some of our traditional allies or some of our closest allies were some of the last countries with which the president-elect spoke. So, you know, that doesn't seem like a big thing, and hopefully it won't be, you know, in the coming months and years. But it does begin to raise some questions on the part of some of our allies, which I think he'll have to address.
Kelly says on Twitter, experts keep saying, I would hope when it comes to Trump, what evidence do we have that he will change from candidate Trump? I think, Bill, you said, well, we don't know. But there is a certain amount of a grace period, at least from American voters, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I don't think the Kim Jong-un in North Korea is going to give Donald Trump a grace period. I really don't. And I don't think al-Baghdadi, the head of Daesh, the head of ISIS, is going to give him a grace period either, or Zawahiri, the head of al-Qaeda. So I think he's going to have to be able to engage right away. And in order to be able to do that, because I don't think he has any particular, in fact, I know he doesn't have any particular experience in national security affairs, he's going to have to rely on his team. That includes his national security advisor, but it also includes people at DOD and people at state as well, in addition to the intelligence community. And he's going to have to move pretty quickly on that, and he's going to have to rely on them more and not just sort of go his own way and Twitter in the middle of the night. I don't think that works anymore. That was maybe okay as a candidate. I don't even think it was then, but it's certainly not okay as a president.
Call here from Chad in Fargo. Hi, Chad.
Hey.
Hey, what's your question?
Yeah, I was just curious you know, with ISIS, it seems like the media is talking about them all the time, but they're not really a threat to most Americans. Aren't you guys giving them exactly what they want?
Bill?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the media talks about what it talks about because it's newsworthy and because they feel that people need to know. I don't think there's an immediate threat to the homeland with ISIS. There remains a threat, and there's certainly a lone wolf threat. ISIS, I think, is both operational and inspirational, and as an inspiration, I think it has really caused some trouble over the last year or so. But I think the fact that it's hurting our allies, the fact that it's disrupting the Middle East, which is an area of key interest and concern to the United States, makes it a global threat and makes it something that we need to pay attention to.
Conversation on foreign policy and what it looks like under the incoming administration. Bill Danvers with us, Prem Kumar with us. We have not yet talked about an expansionist China. We haven't talked about what this relationship will be like with Russia. And we haven't talked about cyber hacking. And maybe you have some questions about trade policy and those kinds of things. We'll get to that on the other side of news. Phil, what are you watching this hour?
Hi, Carrie. Donald Trump says he's leaving his business empire to focus on being president. Trump tweeted he's not required to do so, but it's visually important as president to in no way have a conflict of interest with my various businesses. Trump says he and his children will hold a news conference about the matter on December 15th. Goldman Sachs executive Steven Mnuchin, Donald Trump's former campaign finance director, is confirming Trump has picked him as Treasury Secretary, and billionaire investor Wilbur Ross has been chosen for Commerce Secretary. Mnuchin and Ross appeared this morning on MSNBC. Storms that spawned deadly winds that dumped more than 2 inches of rain across much of northern Alabama, causing floods after months of drought. The National Weather Service issued a flood warning for much of northern Alabama today. 5 people were killed in Alabama and Tennessee as the line of storms moved across the south, spawning tornadoes. Soaring oil prices are sending energy stocks sharply higher in early trading today, edging the Dow Jones Industrial Average up to another all-time high. The price of benchmark U.S. crude jumped 6% in New York early today after OPEC countries moved closer to finalizing a deal to reduce oil production. And Grant Tinker, who brought The Mary Tyler Moore Show and other hits to the screen as a producer and network boss, has died. His son says Tinker died Monday at his home in Los Angeles at the age of 90. Tinker is best known for his work at MTM Enterprises. He founded the company in 1970 with then-wife Mary Tyler Moore. In addition to Moore's own groundbreaking situation comedy based in Minneapolis, MTM scored with series including Rhoda, The Bob Newhart Show, and Hill Street Blues. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:38.
Every Wednesday on All Things Considered, get a taste of regional food and drink trends, reviews, recipes, and advice. Our stable of food experts serve it up on Appetites. I'm Tom Cran. What's news and what's for dinner? Join me starting at 3.
You've probably been hearing news this morning about Donald Trump and soon-to-be Vice President Mike Pence going to Indiana to talk about the fact that they've saved some jobs at a carrier manufacturing plant there. We have a show on the podcast right now about whether Donald Trump really can save enough manufacturing jobs to make a difference. You can find it on the podcast, NPR News with Carrie Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Minnesota Dance Theater, presenting Loyce Holton's Nutcracker Fantasy, with music performed by the 44-piece Nutcracker Orchestra December 16th through 23rd at the State Theater. Tickets through Ticketmaster.com. Information at mndance.org.
Programming is supported by Great River Energy, providing reliable electric service to 28 Minnesota member co-ops with a diverse mix of power generation, including power plants and renewable energy. Great River Energy, powering what's possible.
Programming supported by House of Charity. 365 days a year, the food center meets the needs of the hungry and homeless. Your support helps serve hot, nutritious meals, assisting to restore dignity and hope. Houseofcharity.org.
A little later in the hour, we'll hear from John Brennan, who's leading the CIA right now. He talked to the BBC security correspondent. You'll hear what he has to say about Iran and a number of foreign policy and intelligence challenges. We continue our conversation today with Prem Kumar, Senior Vice President at the Albright Stonebridge Group, former Senior Director on the White House National Security Council, and Bill Danvers with us, a Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress and served in several different roles in national security, and a call here from Joe in Minneapolis. Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yes, I thank you for letting me to speak to you.
Sure.
I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Anyway, to be quick, I am concerned that the incoming administration might overlook the importance of certain things. Like several years ago, I was in Hong Kong and I was browsing a bookstore and happened to come across a book that was that looked at why U.S. has been so strong since the Second World War as a world leader. And they point to U.S. dollar as the international monetary unit, our economic system, trade, military. And guess what? If you look at China, strategically, they're doing everything on all those points. And yet our incoming administration, their rhetoric on world trade, want to renegotiate and terminate all the trade agreements. I think there's a very long-term strategic exposure there.
Okay.
Because right now, I think China is doing the Silk Road trade agreement, and the fact that if we don't go through the Pacific Trade Alliance, guess what? They are living ahead of us.
Joe, let me do this. I appreciate you raising that. We haven't talked about that yet. And Bill, can I come to both of you on trade and China and China's ambitions and some of the things that President-elect Trump has said about China? Would you speak to that?
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. I think the idea that candidate Trump suggested of imposing high tariffs on China is a non-starter. It's a non-starter, one, because it would disrupt the global economy in profound ways, and I would guess that his economic advisors would warn him off that. I certainly would hope they would. The second thing is we have a relationship with China that is two ways. We trade a lot with China. We rely on goods from China. I mean, I think I probably have two or three things that I'm wearing right now that come from China. And a lot of the people that voted for Donald Trump probably get a lot of their goods from China. So that's very disruptive as well. The other thing is if you remember during the Great Depression, there was something called the Smoot-Hawley tariff that was imposed. It was a very high tariff on trade, and it basically disrupted the global economy and deepened the recession as opposed to made things better. We need to take a hard look at how we deal with economic issues and trade agreements. I quite agree that we need to take a hard look at those issues, particularly since economies like China have matured. But to throw trade out the window is completely and totally ridiculous. There's also a national security dimension to dealing with China in terms of what they're doing in the East China Sea, what they're doing in the South China Sea. But we also need to rely on them with respect to how we're going to be handling North Korea. And we had to rely on them in terms of how we deal with how we dealt with Iran and the Iran nuclear deal. So it's a complicated relationship with China. It's a complicated relationship with the other nations in East Asia. And we need to have, again, experts who both have the experience and the knowledge and the insight as to how to handle this. And we can't fly off the handle the way candidate Trump did. It would be counterproductive in so many profound ways.
Prema, I also think one of the things that Joe was alluding to, our caller, was the Pacific strategy that President Obama was kind of turning our foreign policy to. Do you have any sense that that has paid any dividends and that candidate Trump would be best to continue that or not?
I think it has. I mean, I think that a number of our allies in the Pacific, Australia, Japan, even Vietnam, have made clear that they want close relationships with the U.S., and we're counting on the U.S. to increase its presence in the Pacific and to act as a counterweight to aggressive Chinese behavior. One vehicle through which we were going to cement those partnerships was the TPP, obviously the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal. And obviously, candidate Trump has said that he's going to withdraw from that agreement and make sure that it doesn't become law. Which is a concern, I'm sure, to the Japanese and to others. But, you know, more importantly, I think they are looking to see how reliable and clear the Trump administration is going to be in confronting the challenges that it faces from China and from other issues in the Pacific, including North Korea. Because, you know, so far with candidate Trump talking about things like climate change being a Chinese hoax, you know, threatening to start a trade war if he doesn't get his way, there are all real questions about how he's going to proceed. And as Bill rightly said, you know, these relationships are very complicated. We need to – there are challenges that we need to address from a country like China, but there are also opportunities. And we are going to need their help on issues like North Korea, on, you know, continuing to grow the global economy as we protect our own interests. And the question is, can President Trump manage those competing demands well?
You know, Bill, I really wanted to talk about climate change, too, because ironically, even though Donald Trump says or has said in the past that climate change is some kind of Chinese hoax, we've made some major progress on climate agreements, including hydrofluorocarbons, a big agreement with China between President Obama and the leader of China earlier this year. And I think both countries also perceive climate change as not just an environmental issue, but also a national security issue. What are the implications of that if Trump rolls that back?
Security issue. And it would be a tragedy of epic proportions if he tries to roll it back, even partially. And it's not only China, it's India as well. And it's not only China and India, it's a global issue. We've made some progress because of the hard work of President Obama and his team, and actually leaders in France and China and India as well. We cannot reverse that. It is a national security concern because of all the devastating occurrences as a result of climate change. So to reverse that is really to put us in a very dangerous place, not only in terms of the climate, not only in terms of food security, but in terms of overall national security. So it would be my hope that there would be a sober briefing of the new president on just how much of a problem it would be, how much of a devastating problem it would be if he chooses to reverse what the progress that was made in Paris and elsewhere.
Prem, how long do you think this, what looks to be a mutual admiration society between Trump and Putin, will last? And what are your greatest concerns in that relationship?
Well, that's a good question. And I mean, my greatest concern is that this election may have sent a signal to the Russians, Putin in particular, that they can interfere in our democratic process.
And you mean emerge, with the hacking?
Relatively, yeah, with the hacking, with the selective hacking, I should say, and the release of emails, et cetera, and the propaganda that was coming out of you know, Russian-controlled organizations. So, you know, what kind of message and precedent that sets, I think, is very important and still needs attention, and we need to get to the bottom of what happened during the election. But then, you know, in terms of the next administration, you know, what will the shape of our cooperation or confrontation possibly with Russia over Syria look like? I mean, the candidate Trump talked about wanting to have a stronger, closer relationship with Russia. That also means basically a close relationship with Iran with regard to Syria, because Russia and Iran are cooperating very closely. And is that the kind of foreign policy that the Trump administration is going to pursue, one in which Iran and its friends like Bashar al-Assad, Hezbollah, are going to take the advantage in places like Syria against some of the groups and countries that we've been supporting? The same thing is true with regard to the Iran nuclear deal. You know, candidate Trump said that he wanted to rip it up. The Russians were instrumental in getting that deal done, and I think they're not necessarily going to support steps that would put that agreement into peril. So, you know, I think there are a lot of questions about how Trump is going to relate to Vladimir Putin, and I think it's incumbent on all of us to go back to a point that you made earlier, Kerry, to hold him accountable, because we don't really know where his information is coming from. We hope it will come from credible sources, but we need to know on what basis he's making decisions with a country like Russia, where, you know, he didn't acknowledge that Russia was even necessarily involved in the hacking during the election, when the intelligence community said very clearly that they were. So it's going to be very important to see what he bases his foreign policy towards Russia on.
You know, Bill, I'm thinking as I'm listening to Prem say that, you know, a lot of, for people on the outside, a lot of foreign policy decision-making is opaque. It's hard to understand how any team really makes decisions, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, if you follow these issues on a regular basis, or if you've had some been fortunate enough to have had some experience working in a department or at the White House, then you have a better understanding of how it is, and it's really not as opaque. There obviously is a part of it that of the decision-making process, which is classified and is classified rightly because the information, you protect methods and sources, and because you also want to be able to make the decision in a way where you're not necessarily moved by sort of the politics of the moment. But if you listen to shows like this one, Carrie, and if you read real news, and if you read real journals, you can have a sense of what's going on in the world and what the administration is thinking on these issues. It's really not as opaque as it may seem if you make an effort. And maybe that's something that people need to do more and more, is make an effort to get the real facts, to get the real news. And again, listening to shows like this is a good way to start.
Bill, what's the international hotspot that the Trump team may not be prepared for? And this probably happens to a lot of administrations.
I would say North Korea.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I would say North Korea is a huge problem, and it's a tough problem for any administration. I've heard them say very little about North Korea, except that maybe they ought to, that Japan ought to get its own, and South Korea ought to get its own nukes. But I think North Korea is a huge issue, and it's in part because the Korean Kim Jong Un is so unpredictable. In part because it's unclear how much leverage China actually has over Kim Jong Un, and it's also talking about it being opaque. It's unclear exactly how far along he is with respect to being able to weaponize a ballistic missile. I think it's something that needs immediate attention. There are a lot of issues that need immediate attention, but that would be one that I'd be very, very concerned about, in part because this is a fairly inexperienced, well, it's a very inexperienced president, and I'm not sure how experienced his team is going to be in dealing with these kinds of issues.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Enlightening, and I think we benefit from your experience and your knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carrie. It's a pleasure.
Prem, where is the international hotspot that the Trump team may have to deal with that they're not aware of?
You know, I actually agree with Bill. I think North Korea is going to be one of the first tests. And that's in part because the North Koreans have a history of testing new American presidents and, you know, trying to see how far they can push the line. And with President Trump, they, along with many others, don't really know what the answer to that question is. And that raises a lot of red flags for not just Americans, but people around the world, because that's a situation where things can escalate and where decision-making under pressure is really important. So I think North Korea is going to be really important. I think climate change is also, may not be the first issue that comes up, but it's one of the most consequential decisions, and whether President Trump does try to pull out of the Paris Accords and basically undermine the Clean Power Plan are going to be important, not just for the future of our country and our kids, but also for the future of American leadership, because that was an initiative that we pushed, the Obama administration did, and corralled the support of many important countries like China and India. And if we pull back, then that's going to be a signal to the rest of the world that America is not really prepared to lead on these important issues anymore.
Prem, really a pleasure to have you here. I hope you'll have time sometime to come back and continue the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.